Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Bonjour, willkommen, welcome to the weekend, howdy and hi, I'm Radical Russ Belville, and this is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. We're broadcasting from our flagship station, 620 KPOJ in Portland, Oregon, and taking your calls at 1-866-5577-377. Oh, boy, it's been quite a busy week this week. It's been a busy week for yours truly, too. Boy, it's been been kind of a bummer this week for me. Have you ever lost your wallet? Yeah, I lost my wallet. I did the show last week. You know, we all listened together, and we did the show last week, and I left the show, and I lost my wallet. I know I had it here because you have to have the wallet card to get in the building. So I had it here at KPOJ, and then I left, and I lost the wallet. So if anyone out there in the radio airspace has my wallet, please look inside, find my address, and send it back to me. I really need my wallet. But it's not all bad news here on the Russ Belville show. I also have been up camping the past couple of days up near Mount Hood over here in Oregon. So it's been beautiful, even though it rained on us. That's not a big deal here in Oregon. That's just liquid sunshine. We love the liquid sunshine here. But, of course, it's not all about me here at the Russ Belville Show. It's all about radical progressives and what we're looking forward to and what's happening in the news today that really gets our attention. And what are we going to do about it, of course? And the number one thing, of course, in the news is the news from Iraq. That's got to be our number one focus here. Every day that our soldiers are dying is another day too many in this war in Iraq. And, you know, it's been a week since I talked to you last, and since I spoke to you last, yeah, that's right, we've had more of our American servicemen who have passed away in the service of our country trying to install an oil-safe democracy out there in the Middle East. 21 U.S. servicemen have died since we last spoke last week. That's right, 21 servicemen in a week, three a day. So this show is dedicated to the memories of Specialist Hosiah Hollopter, PFC Casey Carricker, Specialist Damon LeGrand, Lance Corporal Johnny Strong, PFC William Johnson, Lieutenant Colonel Glade Felix, PFC Cameron Payne, Corporal Nathaniel Fender, Corporal Marisbang Nagarakhead, Specialist Adam Harold, Staff Sergeant Brian Long, Airman First Class Eric Barnes, Private Scott Miller, Sergeant Corey Endlich, Senior Airman William N. Newman, Sergeant First Class Greg L. Sutton, and five more of our brave servicemen whose names have not been released yet, pending notification of their families. That's what it's all about. That's what we're talking about. Real people, real people's lives, families and friends, husbands and wives, fathers and mothers, brothers and sisters who are out there fighting. Fighting for what? Fighting for what is what I want to know. You know, we're supposed to go in there to rid Saddam of his weapons of mass destruction. You know, that's what I originally heard this was all about. You know, Saddam was going to get us because we had the WMDs. He's gonna take us out with a mushroom cloud.
Those weapons of mass destruction got to be somewhere.
Yeah, George can't find the weapons of mass destruction. So then, of course, it was about, you know, setting up freedom and setting up democracy and fighting this global war on terror, whatever that is. And, 21 more kids, 21 more adults, soldiers out there who have lost their lives in the service of this war. And, you know, we've got to stand up and do something about it. And a lot of us thought we did last November. A lot of us thought that we stood up and went out to the polls and elected a Democratic Congress that would do something about this war in Iraq and this war in Afghanistan. Well, we're still waiting for the results of that. Politics is a long, drawn-out battle, and I know that many folks, like myself, we all get frustrated at this sometimes because, you know, the wheels turn so slowly. I know when we had this war bill that came up, the funding bill that we had the timetables in, and we finally, you know, the Democrats kind of caved in on that and gave a blank check to President Bush. And just what's it going to take? You know, we're having 3-4 soldiers die a day. You know, what's it going to take before people, you know, are going to take to the streets? What's it going to take before a Democratic majority, you know, responds to the will of the people here and stands up a little stronger to end this war in Iraq? I don't know what we're going to have to do about this. I guess get on the phone and call them. Here's the congressional hotline if you would like your number for your congressman. It's 202-225-3121. And that's how you can get in touch with your congressman and your senator. It's 202-225-3121. That's what I would have to suggest is that we just have to keep pounding the phones and keep sending the mails and keep demonstrating. We've got to do something more than what we're doing. It's up to us. It's up to the American people to get this war stopped. The politicians are always going to follow behind us on this. It's the anti-war movements and the people that are going to make a change here. Now, looking at more of the news from Iraq this week, General Dave Petraeus was in the news here. General Petraeus had some interesting things
Good
to say.
Oh, hello.
Dave Petraeus. He's got a plan for Iraq that's going to save us. Don't you blame us, Dave Petraeus. The surge is going to save us.
Yeah, the surge is going to save us. That was the one of the stories from this week, is that that so-called surge has now surged. The surge has surged. That's right. All of the troops that were supposed to be surged into Iraq have finally surged into Iraq. Because, you know, when we were talking about how, well, look at this surge, you know, we're still having violence, we're still having problems, it doesn't seem to be working. And they kept saying, well, just wait, the surge isn't complete yet. We haven't got all those troops surged in. Well, now they're all surged in. So let's take a look at what's going on in Iraq now that the surge has been completed. Dave Petraeus, the four-star general who's in charge out there in Iraq, had an astonishing quote here in the USA Today. He had an interview in the USA Today, and he said that he was seeing astonishing signs of normalcy in Baghdad. Astonishing signs of normalcy in Baghdad. Let me give you the full quote here. This will just blow your mind. Here's his full quote. I'm talking about professional soccer leagues with real grass field stadiums, several amusement parks, big ones, markets that are very vibrant. The Iraqi army in general has done quite well in the face of some serious, serious challenges. Yeah, I would imagine the challenges might be a little difficult out there in Iraq. You know, you're trying to run your amusement park and the helicopters keep flying overhead and you got the gunshots going off and the machine guns. And yeah, I could imagine that it might be a little bit difficult to pull off an amusement park and a soccer field in the middle of all that. What in the world has this guy been smoking? Come on, General Petraeus. Even you can't say that with a straight face, can you? Professional soccer leagues with real grass field stadiums. That's the astonishing signs of normalcy. Well, here's some of the bad news, General. You know, just last week, one of the prominent Iraqi soccer players, a guy named Marwan Jafar, a prominent Iraqi soccer player, was killed in a mortar attack last month. Now, no word whether or not he was on one of those new grass fields or not, but yeah, astonishing signs of normalcy. You know, the car bombs going off, and oh, we just had that mosque that got bombed too, the Golden Mosque of Samarra, the big Shiite shrine, and of course some of the Sunni mosques are being bombed now in retaliation. Yeah, that's the astonishing signs of normalcy that's happening in Iraq. You know, you can't fool us. I know you've tried. You've and done quite a good job over the past years trying to fool the American people, not letting us see the pictures of the coffins coming home, not letting us see the funerals of the soldiers, not showing us the pictures out from the battlefield, the pictures that the European media has been showing and all the people in the rest of the world have been seeing. We don't get to see those pictures here in America because, like I said last week, they learned the lesson of Vietnam. Okay, all of these war hawks, all these, and it's the same guys. I mean, you look back to the Nixon years and, you know, all the same guys that were floating around in the Nixon years and floating around in the Reagan years during Iran-Contra, they're all back. And boy, did they learn their lesson for Vietnam. And you know what that lesson was? Don't let the people sacrifice in this war. Don't let the American people see any sacrifice in the war. As long as it's just something out there, something way out there that we don't have to fret about, that we don't have to have any rationing or see any bad pictures on our television. You know, that, and no draft, of course. Oh, God forbid we have a draft. We can't have the accidental possibility that some rich person's kid might end up in the war. No, we can't have that. No, we can't have a draft. We can't have any sort of sacrifice from the American people. And so that's how they continue to get away with this. That's how they keep getting away with this, is just by pulling the wool over our eyes. But, you know, it's starting to come off. You know, even after 5 years of the American people kind of sleepwalking through this war, we're starting to notice, you know, when that count got above the number of people that had died on September 11th, everybody kind of took a deep breath and went, well, wait a minute. You know, why are we still there? What's going on? So, well, let's talk about that. You can give me a call at 866-5577-377. And my question to you is this: what is it going to take to get our Democratic leaders to more strongly stand up against the president, this Mr. 28% approval rating? What's it going to take? What, do we got to get the guy down to 20%? You know, got to get him down to where just Barney the dog supports him? God. And then Petraeus here talking about this astonishing normalcy. Boy, doesn't that just remind you of when John McCain went out there to the Iraqi market and he strolled around the market? He said, yeah, you know, you can walk around freely in Baghdad. They're doing great things out there. Yeah, you can walk around freely if you got an escort of about 100 soldiers, 3 Black Hawk helicopters, and 2 Apache gunships. Yeah. Oh, and speaking of the astonishing signs of normalcy, that market where McCain walked around with the gunships and all that, well, 21 Iraqis who worked in that Baghdad market after McCain went there, after he left, just shortly after he left, 21 of those Iraqis were ambushed, bound, and shot the day after he left. Yeah, there's your astonishing signs of normalcy, Dave Petraeus. There's what we're talking about when we talk about the astonishing signs of normalcy. Oh, boy. Well, it's 18 after the hour. I'm Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show, and we got more Iraq right after the break.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Red State Refugee, Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Yeah, Dave Petraeus, our leader of the forces out there in Iraq. Boy, is this guy, I don't know, is this guy lost it or what? You know, Harry Reid, the Democratic leader in the Senate, Senator Harry Reid, has come out recently, and recently he just said, this was just the other day, was saying that Dave Petraeus isn't in touch with going on with what's going on in Baghdad. Also says that he thinks Petraeus here has not been sufficiently open in his testimony to Congress. Went and said, he told us it was going great. As we've looked back, it didn't go so well. And boy, have the righties jumped on this one. Boy, if you've surfed over anywhere in the right-wing blogosphere or checked out any of the right-wing talk show hosts, boy, they are just hammering Reid for this. How dare you come out and say that General Petraeus is out of touch with what's going on in Iraq? Well, let's take a look at what's going on in Iraq, shall we? The Pentagon just released their first quarterly report dealing with President Bush's escalation strategy, the surge. And here's their finding. Overall levels of violence increased throughout much of Iraq in recent months as the attacks shifted away from Baghdad and Anbar province and into cities and provinces that had been relatively peaceful before the Bush administration troop buildup. You know, Petraeus was saying that, you know, the Iraq has, you know, the soccer fields and the amusement parks. Well, here's definitely one of the games from the amusement park. This is the old whack-a-mole game. Remember that from the amusement park? One little mole pops his head up, you smack him with a hammer, and then another mole pops up somewhere else. That that's what's happened with this surge, is we're just playing whack-a-mole. The violence leaves from Baghdad and Anbar, moves on to some other province or some other city where there wasn't so much violence. We move our boys over there, they move back to Baghdad and Anbar. Why? Well, if you'll remember, at the beginning of this war, all the experts, all the guys who'd fought these kind of wars before, General Shinseki being one of these, had said, well, we need about 350 to 500,000 troops to get this done right. Yeah, 300,000 to 500,000 troops. And they said, nope, can't do that. And then they fired Shinseki for even mentioning it. It's no surprise that this whack-a-mole thing is happening here, since we just don't have enough troops in the country. Not that I want more troops in the country, but there's the point, is of course the overall levels of violence have gone up. Their political reconciliation. Now, this is the report. Again, this is a report from the Pentagon. This isn't your old Radical Russ coming up with this stuff. This is the Pentagon saying it. Says that the political reconciliation is at a standstill. They can't get anything passed through that Iraqi Congress, through that Iraqi Parliament, excuse me. Again, the same old tensions between Sunni and Shia and Kurd. This is a political problem, and we cannot shoot our way or bomb our way into getting these people to agree over their thousands of years worth of differences. They're going to have to figure it out. Another finding, suicide bombs have more than doubled from January to April. More than doubled. From January to April. And here's the other finding. 36% of the Iraqi people, so well over a third of the Iraqi people, believe that the Iraqi people would be better off if the country were divided into three or more separate countries. You know, and probably we're talking as Sunni, Shia, and Kurd, different countries there. So these are the findings from the Pentagon. And Harry Reid is saying that Petraeus is very, very out of touch. He's not in touch with what's going on in Iraq. And of course, when the guy comes out and says that he sees astonishing signs of normalcy, real grass fields for soccer and big markets, vibrant markets, and several amusement parks, well, yeah, no wonder people are saying he's out of touch. Tony Snow, the White House spokesbot, came out and he was just jumped right into it, saying this was a terrible thing to say that Petraeus is out of touch. You know, they said at a time of war, for a leader of a party that says it supports the military, it seems outrageous to be issuing slanders toward the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and also the man who's responsible for the bulk of military operations in Iraq. Slander, it's just saying the emperor has no clothes. It's just recognizing the truth that's going on there. I mean, come on, righties. Quit being so political and partisan about this. Even you've got to admit, looking at what's going on in Iraq, that Petraeus has no clue, or maybe he has the clue and he's just not telling us. They're painting a rosy picture here. It's all political. They're trying to get this set up for the elections to let us, to make us believe that this surge is working, to make us believe that this policy is working, to set up the Republican Party for the GOP elections coming up here in 2008 for the presidential elections. They're whitewashing it. We all know they're whitewashing it. The Shia mosque that got bombed just got bombed again. And it was an inside job. They posed as cameramen. These insurgents posed as cameramen so they could get there to bomb those minarets. An inside job. The Iraqis can't even protect their number one most sacred shrine, and we're supposed to be there relying on them to stand up so that they can protect themselves, and that's when our troops are going to leave? Boy, if that's the standard, we got a long way to wait before our troops are going to come back. Ah, boy. This Iraq thing just gets worse and worse and worse, and we've got to call our congressional representatives and get this thing changed. I'm Russ Belville. This is the Russ Belville Show. It's 28 after the hour.
KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
First time caller? That's okay. He's a first-time host, the winner of the search for the next great progressive talk radio star. This is the Russ Belville Show.
33 after, and we've only got 583 days, 12 hours, 21 minutes, and 55 seconds left in the criminal Cheney-Burton maladministration. So there's some reason to celebrate, I suppose. Unless, of course, we do something about it sooner. Our phone number here is 866-5577-377. If you'd like to get on the fun, if you're one of the truly radical progressives out there, let's hash this out. Let's figure out how we can save the world one boy, one girl, one person at a time. Talking about the surge here, the surge is now complete. That's right. They, as of, I think it was yesterday, or maybe it's Thursday. I can't remember exactly. But that was the date that they set, where they said, as of this date, this is when the last part of the surge will be complete. The troops, you know, for the surge will be in country. So now we're looking at having about 170,000 U.S. troops in country there, whereas previously we had about 140,000, 150,000. And throughout the war, we've had around 135,000 troops in the country. So, of course, the surge, the idea here was that we would send more troops into the country in order to help secure Baghdad, in order to help set up a better security so that the government that's there could start to get their work done. So there'd be a little more safety and security so the government could start their work. Well, when you start to look at the numbers, the surge is really just another one of those amusement park games. You know the amusement park game of find the pea? You know, the three-card money, the find the ball under the cup? What do they call that? The shuffle game? I forget the exact name of it. But remember the coalition of the willing. When this whole war started, Bush talked all about the coalition of the willing and all these countries that were going to help us out. Of course, Britain sent thousands of troops, you know, 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 troops there as well. This coalition of the willing, when we first began it, had 34 countries in it. And when we had those 34 countries as part of the coalition of the willing, there was a total of about 180,000 coalition troops in country. Okay. So we just completed our surge, and our surge was to put in another, 28,500 troops in country as part of this surge. Well, while we've been doing that, and since this surge, since these, the coalition was first formed, in 2003 to begin this war, the 34 countries in this surge have winnowed themselves down to just 21 countries. Yeah, we've gone from 34 countries down to 21, so we've lost 13 countries, the coalition of the not-so-willing anymore. Of those 21, two of them, Poland and Denmark, are set to remove some of their troops within the next couple of months. So we're going to go down to 19 countries in that surge, or in the coalition, right? Now, of those 19 countries that will be part of our coalition, seven of these countries have less than 100 troops in the country. You know, we're talking about the little guys, you know, Palau and Luxembourg and these little countries, right? And another nine of the countries out of the 19 have less than 500 troops in country that are serving in Iraq there, right? So 16 out of the 19 countries that will be remaining as part of the coalition of willing will have less than 500 of their own troops there. So when you do the subtraction, when you take these countries that have left the coalition and you take how many soldiers they took out, our surge of 28,500 troops is just replacing the soldiers that have left from the other countries. That's right. That's right. When we had the whole coalition in country, we had about 180,000 troops. Now that we're done with the surge, there's a total of about 180,000 troops. So tell me again how this surge is supposed to help something when we still have the same number of troops. Well, I'll tell you what it helps. It helps the other countries that have left, because it's not their kids that are dying in this surge. It's our kids that are dying in this surge. Now, speaking of some of these kids, you know, sometimes this war stuff can get so big. It's such a big issue, and it's just so heinous that it's hard to wrap your mind around it. It's like that old saying about, you know, how do you eat an elephant? Well, one bite at a time. You know, this is a big issue, and so we have to just start looking at it one little bite at a time. And here's one little bite from this war that I wanted to express to you here. This is a story out of New York. This is out of upstate New York, around Buffalo area, West Seneca, New York, okay? And there's this kid, Lance Corporal Michael McMahon. Well, I shouldn't call him kids. He's 21, okay? I'm 39, so They're starting to look like kids to me, okay? The age is creeping up on me. But anyway, Lance Corporal Michael McMahon is a member of the 1st Battalion, 2nd Marines, and his father, you know, they were lacking body armor. You know, that's the same, you know, problem that we've been having, you know, of sending our troops in harm's way without the proper equipment. You know, that's the Republican way. That's the support the troops way, I suppose. So this Lance Corporal Michael McMahon, you know, his father was really concerned that his son's out there getting shot at, getting bombed at, and didn't have the proper body armor. So the father here went and purchased, he personally went out and purchased the Spartan II body armor. Is called a vest. It's a Spartan II body armor vest, and it costs $275. So he went out and bought one of these Spartan II vests, one for his son and two more for his buddies, because they'd heard about this. They'd heard about this Spartan armor and how great it was. So the father bought three of these vests to send to his buddy and two of his friends. Now, as the rest of the people in that town in West Seneca, New York here, heard about this issue, and you know, there's local news stories about, you know, we're needing to send the armor to the kids. Hearing that, the members of an American Legion post, American Legion Post 735, decided to get together and buy more of the vests, to buy 20 more vests for the rest of Lance Corporal McMahon's unit, right? So they were going to outfit this whole unit. This is the Marines here, this Marine unit, 1st Battalion, 2nd Marines, this platoon. They were going to, out of the goodness of their hearts, and this is the great thing about America, people will band together, and if you ask them to help, they will. Mr. Bush, if you ask people to get involved, they will. But anyway, they get involved and they buy these vests for these kids and they send them out, you know, send them out with the kids so that they can have this protection out there in the field. Here's the kicker. The Marine Corps will not let them wear the vests. Yeah. They went, the American people, the father and the members of this American Legion post went out and spent $275 per vest for the Spartan II vest, and the Marines company commander out there decided that the body armor could not be used, could not be worn. Now, the Marines out there in the field will tell you that the Spartan II vests are a great, great personal protection vest, and a lot of them consider it to be more protective than the Marine Corps standard issue vest. And it's not as if this is some sort of, you know, weird fly-by-night operation that's putting together these vests. These Spartan II vests are used by other units. And they take the same plates, right? When the government gives you, you know, your body armor, if you get body armor, it comes with these little plates that are removable, kind of like football pads in a football uniform, right? So these plates will go into the Spartan II vest. So it's just a vest that can take the plates that the government's already giving the Marines, and they won't let them wear that. And the people back in West Seneca, back in New York, are just livid about this. One of the guys in the American Legion post says, I'm a police officer, and the police department gives us these vests. So, I mean, what's the problem with this? So I did a little more digging here, little digging here. What are the Marines' policies as far as armor goes? Because maybe there's a legitimate reason. Maybe there's been a flaw found in the vest. Maybe it doesn't meet standards of some sort. You know how the military and bureaucracies are. There's rules and regs that have to be followed. Well, check this out. As recently as Thursday, the Marine Corps signed a contract with the company that makes Spartan II vests, and at least one Marine commander in Iraq is already using the vests out there. So it's just this one commander, this other commander has made the personal decision that those Marines can't wear that vest. And furthermore, in the Marine Corps, the official policy is that the commanders get to approve any personal protective equipment that is not government issued. So the commander out there has the latitude to make this decision on his own, to let these Marines, this Lance Corporal McMahon and the rest of his squad, wear this body armor, and that body armor's sitting. It's sitting in a room somewhere while these guys are getting shot at and get bombed at. blood pressure. So this is what's happening in this war, and this is where we got to attack this, you know, one issue at a time. You know, if they're not letting our kids have the body armor that our people buy for them, you know, what else are we going to have to do to protect our kids? What are we going to have to do to end this war? If you have any ideas, I'm willing to listen to them. It's 866-55-77-377. It's 43 after the hour.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Russ now, 866-557-7377. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, welcome back. 45 after the hour. You know, I don't try to make this show all Iraq all the time, but, you know, when you're in the middle of the war, you got to talk about it. That's the way I look at things here. But, you know, we got plenty more up on the plate for the rest of the hour 15 that we got here. That immigration bill is back from the dead, apparently, so we're going to cover that a little bit. And, of course, there's been some subpoenas that have come out in that Alberto Gonzalez scandal, that whole U.S. attorney scandal. Apparently, Harriet Myers and Sarah Taylor are going to have to testify under oath in front of Congress, so we'll cover that as well. And I've also got... Well, I got some stories. How do you put this? You know, it is radio, and you can't say that word. So, poo. That's what I'll use. Poo. We got some stories about poo. Yeah, I know it's a strange subject, but we'll get there. But I got one last thing I had to cover here about the military in Iraq here, and this was. The officers, military officers here, recent interviews from these military officers are increasingly seeing what they call a post-occupation troop presence in Iraq. You know, we talked a little bit about this last year or last week when we were talking about how they were looking at the South Korea model, that we would keep troops there in Iraq, you know, as a stabilizing presence for years and years and years. Well, basically, here's their assessment. As they say that they would want to draw down about two-thirds of the force, bring it down to about 50,000 troops by late 2008 or early 2009. And here's the money quote here that I thought was interesting. It says, "The officials are grappling not with whether the presence will be cut, but with how quickly, to what level, and to what purpose." All right, so I'm kind of mixed here because, of course, I want to have our troops out of Iraq. I want to get us out of Iraq. We shouldn't have gone there in the first place. It's time for us to get out now. And anything that would bring 100,000 or so troops home, that's great. But this idea that we're there to stay, that we're setting up there and we're going to keep 50,000 troops there, that's something I can't get on board with. The other thing here, too, is isn't the timing interesting here? Isn't the timing a little interesting? They're going to reduce the force by late 2008. What's going on in late 2008? The Olympics are already over by that time. Let's see, late fall of 2008. What could possibly, you know, football season. Yeah, that's good, football season. Oh, yeah, there's a presidential election. Oh, yeah, I remember now, presidential election. Isn't it interesting that President Bush kept coming up there and saying, we're not going to leave, we're not going to leave, we're going to stay there till the job is done. Never mind what the job is, because that keeps changing, but we're going to stay there till the job is done. But, right here before the election, somehow, the job is done. Or at least they're predicting the job will be done. Now, President Bush, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't you tell us that if we didn't stay until the job was done, that they would follow us home? That the terrorists are going to follow us home. Got to fight them there so we don't have to fight them here. Yeah. So which is it? Are we going to stay there till the job is done, or we're going to cut the troops down before the election and then they're going to follow us home? I don't know. Trying to parse any logic or reason from these people is a fool's errand, and I'm not up for it today. So let's move on to some other topics for the day. Let's talk a little bit about this immigration battle. Apparently, this immigration bill is back from the dead. The zombie has risen. And I don't know. I've got to question the political acumen of Harry Reid at this point. What is going on with the Democratic leadership? I mean, they stood up for that bill with the timelines, and then as soon as it got tough, They bolted from it. They ran away from that bill, and they gave Bush what he wanted. So now, here's Bush coming up with his immigration bill that he really, really wants. You know, he really wants this guest worker thing, and he really wants this strong immigration bill so he can have some sort of legacy that he did something for this country. And, you know, there was a lot of bipartisan support. Some Democrats, Ted Kennedy was, you know, one of the authors of this bill, and a lot of Republicans wanted this. The moderates wanted to get this done. And, of course, it was derailed by the hardcore conservatives that kept saying, No amnesty. And this was seen as a major failure of the Bush administration, the failure to be able to get this immigration bill to get any headway on it. So now Reid's going to come back and offer him a second chance to put this bill on the burner. Is the idea to continue to fracture the GOP? Is that what's going on here? You know, I'm not exactly sure what the strategy is here, but I don't know if I wouldn't have just left well enough alone. If I'd have just let that bill die, if I was Harry Reid, so that it would just, we're just hanging another failure on the president there. But then, of course, we have to consider the actual people that this bill would affect. So, well, I need to know what you think about this. Give me a call at 866-55-77-377. Was Reid right to go back to this bill? Because he's in charge there. He didn't have to bring this bill back. Or is this something that's going to backfire on the Democrats by bringing this bill back up to the floor for more debates? Is it a good thing for us to have this immigration debate right now? Or should we have just left it be and let it be a failure for the president? It's 51 after the hour. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
55 after the hour. Let's go to your phone calls at 866-5577-377. Got Dick in Beaverton, Oregon hanging on the line. And Dick, tell me, how are we going to get out of Iraq?
Well, I think that the Democrats made a mistake in trying to cut off funding. It would have been much better for them to put up legislation that demanded that we no longer pay the American mercenary corporations to fight there, and that all contracts over there be bid contracts.
Oh. You get the win. You're the winner of the Nail on the Head Award for today. You know, I've been saying that for the longest time here is that, you know, when they were talking about the coalition, you know, the second largest force in our coalition is, just like you said, mercenary contractors.
Yes.
Yeah. And,
Black,
and so,
Blackwater.
Blackwater, Khaki.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you're saying like a bill of some sort to prohibit any sort of what we do, like have them all be bid contracts. And I'm saying if we had some sort of bill that just outlawed any sort of profit making in a war zone, you know, just overall cap any sort of profits and return that back to the Treasury, boy, those guys would be out there quicker than you shake a stick at, I'd imagine.
Yes, or just, you know, this idea would not work, but you require that if they're going to hire mercenaries to fight, that they have to pay our soldiers the same amount of money.
That's, you know, I always imagine, you know, I was in the military myself, and I can't imagine how frustrating it must be to be a truck driver in Iraq and making what a PFC or a sergeant or a specialist makes, you know, not much, not a whole lot of money. $1,300, I think, is the average monthly take home for a soldier. And then to turn and see the guy next to you making $13,000 when he works for, you know, Halliburton or something like that. That's got to kill the morale.
Well, it'll be a really good way to show that we really do support the troops.
That's for sure. And, you know, it would be, I don't know that there's any possible way we could mandate that. But like you said, that would certainly be a way to support the troops. Thank you very much for your call, Dick.
Yeah,
I got to move on here.
Just be no bid to get rid of all the no bid contracts.
Yeah, you know, and this is something, you know, the conservatives always want to talk, the right wing always wants to talk about the market and the free market, but that's not a very free market when your buddies and your cronies just give you these contracts with no bids. I mean, why are they afraid of the bidding process? You know, they're all about capitalism and let the market decide, and I think the market would make a pretty good decision if this were open for open bids. Maybe our soldiers would have some body armor out there. Well, thank you for your call, Dick. I really appreciate it. We got a hard break coming up here. But as we come around the top of the hour, like I said, we got a whole bunch of other stories here. That immigration bill, boy, you know, I need to know, you know, what do you think about this, you know, immigration bill? Is this something you need to see passed? I think when we went to the polls in November, all of us had Iraq on the brain. You know, we were all thinking about Iraq and what are we going to do about Iraq? And the secondary thing we were thinking about is Republican one-party rule and cronyism and scandal and you know, Mark Foley and the you know, all the rotten things coming out, the lies and the misdeeds of the Bush administration. Was immigration up there on the top of your list? Was that something you were thinking about? Boy, we got to do something about the Mexicans. Got to do something about all these illegal immigrants. You know, I don't know that that was a big issue for the American people in this last election, but hey, maybe I was wrong. I've been wrong before. So after the top of the hour, give me a call at 866-55-77-377. I'm Radical Russ, and we'll see you right after the news.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belleville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
This is the Russ Belleville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
Welcome to the weekend. It's Radical Russ here coming at you from Stumptown, Rip City. That's Portland, Oregon, for those of you who don't know. Up here in the great Pacific Northwest. And our phone number here is 866-55-77-377. And it's back from the dead. It's returned from the land of the dead. That's right. The immigration bill is back from the land of the dead. And this is something that, boy, this hits Portland pretty seriously this week. It's kind of an interesting coincidence. This week we had a major raid, a major immigrations raid at the Fresh Del Monte Produce Food Processing Plant in North Portland. And at this food processing plant, they rounded up 167 arrests, 167 arrests of non-citizen workers who did not have proper documentation. And so these 167 workers were rooted up from their work over there at the Fresh Del Monte Produce and taken to a holding facility in Tacoma, Washington. Yep, 167 workers. Now, of course, many of those workers probably are fathers or mothers, and, well, who knows where their kids are right now, who's taking care of the kids. We're breaking up families. Because they had the temerity to walk in and work and cut up produce so that we could eat it. How dare they? Boy, this immigration battle just has so many different tacks to it. It's really hard, you know, especially as a progressive, it's really hard to come up with, you know, what your stance is on this. Of course, you know, I grew up in Nampa, Idaho, which had a large migrant worker population. We had a lot of immigrant workers, very agricultural area out there. So, you know, when it came to picking the sugar beets or topping the corn or picking the peas or the onions, you know, nothing but fields and fields of Mexican migrant workers. And let's just break it down. Let's cut out the euphemisms here about this immigration bill, because really it's, what are we going to do about the Mexicans? Yes, some of them are Guatemalan, some are Honduran, etc. But that's really the big issue here, is what are we going to do about the Mexican workers that are coming in here? Personally, I don't have a problem with someone who wants to come here and work and do a better, you know, make a better life for their family. That is what I thought America was all about. You know, the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Maybe it's time we strike those words out. And speaking of this immigration battle, and we're talking about the coincidences that happen as this immigration bill is firing up again in Congress, Rudolph Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, Mr. 9/11 himself, you know, he was mayor during 9/11. Did you catch that by any chance? Yeah, I know a lot. I know this didn't get reported very well, but Rudolph Giuliani was the mayor of New York during September the 11th. He may have mentioned it a couple of times. Anyway, Giuliani's here in Portland, and he's campaigning at the same time here in Portland. He was here Friday, and he's campaigning, you know, and of course this big raid at the Del Monte Produce went down. And of course, here's what Giuliani had to say to it. This is from the Oregonian. Here's his quote. Quote, this is unfortunately somewhat typical of what is going on around the country, Giuliani said. It is another dramatic example of how our borders are insecure. And if he goes on, of course, to say that we need to build a fence. We need to build a physical fence with, with a flaming moat and sharks with frickin' lasers on their head. I don't know. But so he wants to build a fence. Yeah, that's the other funny thing to me, too, is 20 years ago, Reagan said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Walls were bad back then. Apparently now walls are a good thing. So we want to build this wall to keep the immigrants out. And here's his other plan. Giuliani says we need to have a technological wall, and there would be one single tamper-proof identity card that would distinguish citizens from illegal border crossers. Yeah, the national ID. Well, that doesn't scare anybody, does it? A national ID? That doesn't scare you. Now, the other side of this issue with the whole immigration thing, of course, is the labor side of it. You know, AFL-CIO and other unions. The problem with the illegal immigration, of course, is that the companies can then hire these illegals at, you know, less than the prevailing wage, and they can avoid all of any of the safety considerations and stuff if they're working, you know, if they're using illegal labor. So, you know, this is the side where the anti-immigration people will say, well, they're taking the jobs that Americans just won't do. They're taking the jobs that Americans just won't do. Of course, they leave off the last part of that, which is for slave wages, right? The jobs Americans won't do for slave wages. But this gets confusing, of course, because, you know, there's sometimes we have to look at some people and think, you know, why aren't you working? You know, I drive around the freeway systems here in Portland all the time, and I invariably see somebody standing on the freeway off-ramp with a sign, you know, need food, please help, you know. And I'm thinking, you know, if you're an American citizen, aren't you? And isn't there a job, one of these jobs? Couldn't you be over at the Del Monte plant working? Of course, that issue's the whole, that gets into the whole homeless issue, and that's a whole nother story, and mental health treatment and so on. But this immigration issue, I just need to know how important this is to you. Because as far as I'm concerned, I'm not too upset about the illegal immigrants. I'm not too upset about the people who come here and work hard and they're good citizens and they just want to become a part of America. The newest thing in this immigration bill, too, is it wants to set up, you know, more billions of dollars for border security. And that's not a bad thing, of course. Of course we want to have border security. We want to protect our borders so that, you know, we don't have terrorists or drug dealers, you know, getting through these borders. Of course we want to have something like that. But, you know, the terrorists that came through on 9/11 didn't come through the Mexican border. You know that, don't you? Yeah, they came from the Canadian border, right? So in addition to building this, 700,000-mile fence on the bottom, you know, of our country down there for Mexico, are we also going to be building the same moat, flaming moat, 20-foot-high, razor-wired, sharks with frickin' lasers on their head type of wall for Canada? Are we going to do that too? Because, and remember, if we're going to build a border with Canada, it's not just the northern border, you know, up along the top of Washington and Idaho and Montana and all that. We've also got that big old long border with Alaska, right? They could sneak into Alaska and then they could fly into the mainland. They could fly into the lower 48 there. So are we going to build that wall? And if we do, that's thousands and thousands and thousands of miles of wall we're going to have to build there. And who's going to build that wall? You know, who's going to round up the laborers to build that wall? So, yeah, they want to build a wall. They're talking about, you know, they're raiding these processing plants and breaking up families. And it's a hugely complex issue. And I don't have all the answers for this issue. I got to be honest with you. You know, I'm just one guy and I don't have the right answers for this issue. But that's where I'm looking for your help here. If you want to give me a call at 866-5577-377, how important is this immigration bill to you? Because I think it's something they should have just left. You know, they had this bill defeated. The Republicans were already infighting enough that they filibustered this bill and they defeated this bill. You know, why didn't we just leave it? You know, just leave it for now and let that be a big problem for the Republican Party to have to deal with. Let that be an albatross hanging around George Bush's neck. So the other thing that I think about this immigration bill with a lot of the business side of this is, of course, the business interests don't want to see any sort of bill get passed that provides some sort of legal status for the immigrant. Any sort of guest worker program or any sort of, you know, path to citizenship. Because if these people become citizens, then they're subject to the same laws and the same rights as the rest of us. You know, if they wanted to pay the prevailing wage and pay what they're paying all of us, they'd just hire us. Right. So that's another reason why we have so much opposition and so many different, you know, opinions regarding this bill. The way I look at it, though, most of your immigrants, most of your workers out there are just good people doing a tough job, you know, hard work under hard conditions. And I believe they should have some way to achieve their citizenship. Now, I do have a caller on the line. We've got Gary in Portland, who is just popped up on the line. And so, Gary, what do you think about this? You know, how do you look at this immigration bill, and what do you think we ought to do about the whole immigration problem here in America?
Well, Russ, for the large part, I agree with you that these people are trying to make a living wage. The problem that I see is that actually the problem is not being caused so much by the immigrants come in, but by the companies that are hiring them. If you look at the statistics for the meatpacking industry in the Midwest, wages have gone down over 40% in the last 10 to 15 years. And those are denying American citizens a living wage that they used to be able to make. The construction industry is another perfect example of how wages are being deflated by employers.
That's true.
There's,
you know,
problem.
Yeah, we've got to look at it on the employer side, and it's so much of, you know, I always say that if you threw a few of these, you know, white collar human resources people in the pokey for a while for hiring illegally, that maybe we'd see an abatement a little bit of the illegal hiring practices here. I think another thing that leads to this problem, though, is the American appetite for cheap goods. I mean, you talked about the meatpacking plants and how they've depressed the wages, and yet, you know, people love the 99-cent cheeseburger. So if we turn this around and if we do start hiring people and paying them living wages, how do we convince the rest of the American people that the attendant rise in costs will be worth it?
Well, that 99-cent cheeseburger is a perfect example of another industry that's completely overwhelmed by immigrant labor now. I mean, when I was a kid, it was standard stuff. When you were 16 to 18 years old, you worked in fast food.
I did.
Kids cannot get a job nowadays when they're out of school in the summertime. They're not there anymore.
Yeah.
And that's destroying a lot of the principle and values that our kids are needing to develop as they're growing up. The work ethic, the ability to get out there and make some money for yourself to pay your own way a little bit. I mean, I started my kids working paper routes when they were 8 and 10 years old.
I think that's a great point. You know, I worked fast food when I was a kid. I did the same thing. I worked fast food when I was a kid, and you know, we see the kids now when they reach college and they get all these credit card offers and they just jump right at them. They have no idea about the meaning of money or how to handle money, and that I think you're right. I think you nailed it. That's a big part of it, is the fact that the kids these days, you know, and the 14, 15, 16-year-old kids can't get these fast food jobs now. So yeah, I think that's a very good point there. Well, thank you very much for your call. I really appreciate that. And if anyone else has opinions on this immigration bill, you know, do we need to go forward, you know, with trying to solve the immigration problem now? You know, I think we've got bigger fish to fry, you know, between the scandals with the attorney general and the war in Iraq. There's a lot of things that we could be focusing on. And, you know, a lot of this to me just smacks of this, you know, dividing the country up, trying to get everybody riled up on some issue where we can separate and divide and so they can continue to pull the wool over our eyes. So let's figure this all out. Let's figure out this immigration thing and move on. I'm Radical Russ. It's 19 after.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Our red state refugee, Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Well, they raided the Fresh Del Monte produce here in Portland and took away 167 workers who did not have proper documentation. Of course, Rudy Giuliani has showed up. He's doing some campaigning here in Oregon, and he says we need to build a fence. And, well, you know, this immigration thing, this is not an easy thing. And the bill keeps coming up. You know, the bill's back. And apparently we're going to talk about immigration some more out there on Capitol Hill. I've got Carol in Madras, Oregon, who's got an opinion on this situation. So, Carol, what do you see as far as this immigration bill goes?
Well, I agree with you that the Democrats should have just left that one hanging like an albatross around the Republicans' neck. This is a strategy on the part of the Republicans, I believe, to distract folks from some real issues, the war, the environment, the destruction of our constitutional form of government. And, you know, it's got people talking. They found that the defense of marriage thing is not working. Gay marriage issue has gone. You know, people are going, yeah, so what?
So what, yeah.
Exactly. So I think that this immigration thing and all the buzz and all this, they need to enforce the laws that are on the books, go after the companies that are bringing these people in and hiring them. And, you know, let's be realistic. This is a strategy.
Yeah. You know, and if it is the Republican strategy to distract us, then why does Harry Reid, the leader of the Democrats, allow this bill to come back up? You know, we are in charge now.
You know, I don't think that's really sorted itself out in the Democratic mind. They're still terrified of saying the wrong thing some way, you know, making a mistake.
Yeah, they're being so cautious that they're just losing in their timidity. You know, I think part of what people have a problem with the Democratic Party is they say they're too timid, they don't stand for anything. So what do? They become timid and don't stand for anything. You know?
Yeah,
so,
it's really unfortunate because the Democratic Party in general, the things that it does truly stand for at its heart are the real American values, and it's really a shame to see them be cowed by this and by not really accepting their leadership role and going with it.
Yeah. Well, Carol, I agree with you 100%. And I thank you for your call. Thank you for your opinion. And that, you know, that leads me on to something. I wanted to cover this story, and this will just be the perfect segue for that, is talking about the Democratic Party and how, you know, they refuse to just jump right to the progressive position. And recently a study came out from Media Matters that shows that America is far more progressive than the pundits and the politicians give us credit for. And I'll give you a little bit of statistics on that. We'll talk about that study here in just a little bit. So I'll just put a note for myself. I remember that after the bottom of the hour. Meanwhile, we've got Becky in Damascus, Oregon here, who's got a question here about the immigration bill. Becky, what do you got to say here about this whole immigration fiasco?
Hi, Russ. I listen to your show every week. I really like it. You're very good.
Well, thank you, Becky.
So one day you'll be discovered on American Idol.
Well, you know, this is the strangest job I've ever had. I've been a performer all my life. I played music professionally, and I've been in speech and debate and drama, and everywhere else I've ever gone, you know, it's you're on a stage and you're in front of people, and if you're bad, you know immediately. You know, you look out and tell. Here, I'm in this room in front of a microphone, and when I'm done, I just leave, and there's nobody there. So I really, Becky, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that compliment. But
yeah,
enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think of me? No, just kidding. Just
don't
kidding.
Hear me say right on. That's it. Because I'm out. But
no.
If I were an illegal Mexican just trying to help my family survive, no immigration bill would matter. I would stay here and take my chances. I wouldn't go home to die and starve.
Well, exactly.
All of us as Americans, we still are middle class enough that we can protest and be outraged at things. Mexico is not. And
right.
We should be outraged that that's going on in that country, and we should go over there and say, come on, we'll help you take. They don't want to be over here. I saw one man who was illegal. He had tears in his eyes saying he's supporting his family. He misses them. He wants to be home.
Well, of course he does. And everybody, you know, I think sometimes we Americans, we get a little America-centric, and we think, you know, America's the greatest country in the world. Everybody loves America. Well, you know, there's plenty of people who were born in Mexico who love Mexico. You know, and they'd prefer to stay there in Mexico with the, you know, land of their ancestors, land of their families, and they'd love to stay there other than the fact that there's like 60% unemployment.
Darn downtrodden. They're too meek now to protest. Tom Hartman says our middle class, when it was stronger, we're heading that way. We've got to be shoulder to shoulder with them and help them take back their country.
I agree with you, Becky. Thank you very much for your call, and keep on listening. I really appreciate the loyal listeners out there. You know, someday when I'm the big talk radio daily star, you can say, I knew that guy way back when he was just a weekend guy. And who knows? Maybe that's the way it'll turn out. Anyway, it is 28 after the hour, and I'm Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. If you'd like to send me an email, you can send me an email at radicalruss@gmail.com.
620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. This is the Russ Belville Show. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Illegal immigration in America. We've got 12 million estimated illegal immigrants working in this country. We've got proposals by every candidate on the map as far as what to do about this, but I need to know what you want to do about the immigration issue in America. We just had a major immigration raid here in Portland at the Fresh Del Monte Foods, where they, I think it was like out of all their workers, only 20 of them were documented, and then like 167 of them are the ones that they took away to Tacoma. They got them in a holding facility now, away from their families and their jobs, of course. So what do you think about this issue? You can call me if you want to get involved in the conversation at 866-5577-377. I've got Jeff in Portland, Oregon, who's got a viewpoint on the immigration debate. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Yes, Russ, it extends into a viewpoint on the economy of the United States and the economy of Mexico. I had the luxury of traveling around the world a bit, thanks to the U.S. Army. I was living in Europe, but I went to Mexico on a personal trip in the early 1980s, and Reagan had just gutted the Mexican currency and made it not very valuable. And I met people who had been middle-class American standard in their lifestyle in Mexico, who were now, in 1982, broken down into a class of impoverishment. I mean, they could no longer come to the United States and shop. And the common people in that country have no economic voice. They pay taxes when they buy anything, an IVA tax, yet there's no investment in their communities, in their, there's resorts built on the coast.
Okay, you make a good point. Let me wrap this up just a little bit, though. So we're looking back to the 80s and the Reagan administration. This is when they devalued the peso. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Correct.
They devalued the peso back in the mid-80s, and Mexico wasn't, we didn't have that big of a problem back in the 80s, if I remember correctly. Of course, I was in high school, so maybe I don't remember correctly, but it seems to me that, yeah, you're right. It's almost as if, you might, if you were a conspiracy theorist, you might think that perhaps those GOP cronies there in the Reagan administration were looking for having a quick and easy supply of cheap labor. Is that what you're getting toward?
I'm getting toward that, and more specifically, I believe that the conspiring minds of the grandsons of the Confederacy, the worst element in the Republican Party, the hardline labor exploiters, looked at Mexico as a model where they've never done anything for the people, and they said, we could do that here incrementally, and I believe that they've been doing it. I believe that the jacking up of the interest rates put a lot of American businesses in dire straits in the 70s, and then I believe that Confederates started buying up and violating antitrust laws and buying corporations, and now we're like living in this corpo conglomerate fascist system, and they're going to want more and more slave labor, and they're shipping the people up here, I'm sure. Contractor is doing it, I'm sure.
Okay, well, thank you. Appreciate your opinion on that one. That starts to get, taking a larger view of this whole overall relationship between management and labor, between corporations and labor here, and that's a topic that we could definitely exhaust many, many hours on here on the Russ Belville Show. And this drive, I've always said that America was founded on the backs of slave labor. You know, America would not be the country it is today were it not for the absolutely free slave labor that we enjoyed for hundreds of years, especially, you know, especially down in the South. But the North, of course, wasn't immune from the positive economic effects from the slave labor. Following, you know, of course, the end of slavery, during we get Reconstruction, and we continue to have Jim Crow laws that would keep the minority population, keep the black population down, and make it so that they would, you know, again, be more impoverished and forced to take the more difficult jobs and less able to unionize and organize. We see it in the labor wars of the early 20th century, when we had the strikes and the wildcat strikes and the violence that took place as workers did start to organize, and we did start to see FDR's New Deal to put more power in the hands of the average American citizen and away from the corporate citizens to create a sustainable middle class in America. And you know, Rick, I think you were onto something there, in that a lot of the policies that we see from especially the Republican Party, but to some extent, the Democrats aren't completely off the hook on this. I mean, it was Bill Clinton's administration that signed NAFTA. It was Bill Clinton that got us the World Trade Organization, so got us into that. So it's not just, you know, the Democrats aren't completely blameless in here. And it seems like we see so many of these initiatives and so many political realities that are designed to create a easily manipulatable, cheap source of labor. You know, one of the issues, and I haven't been able to get to this in the show over the past few weeks, but one of the issues that also strikes very near and dear to me is the issue of education, especially public education in America. My wife is trying to change careers and become a nurse, because they say there's such a nursing shortage in America. And yet there's not enough classes and not enough teachers to take care of all the people who want to become nurses. And the student money that we would get from Pell Grants or from student loans has been cut and cut and cut. The costs of higher education are far outstripping that of inflation. Our public schools are falling apart. All of this is designed to keep us ignorant. It's designed to keep us ignorant and easily manipulated, and to keep us a cheap source of labor. And that's where they're going with this. All of these policies are designed to create a class system of two classes, the haves and the have-nots. They want to eliminate the middle class. That is the goal. They want to undo FDR. They want to undo the new society and the great society and all of the New Deal legislations. They want to go back to having child labor. They want to go back to have us working, you know, 10, 14-hour days, 6 days a week. They loved that. That was great for business. And their point here, you know, I'll hear a lot of people say this, that, you know, there's not a problem with poverty in America because our poor people have big screen TVs. That's the other side of this. They throw all these little trinkets at us, all these nice, cheap electronics made in China to try to keep us happy. If we just have a big enough TV, we'll be happy and we won't notice, you know, all the terrible things going on around us. Of course, we used to build those TVs back here in America, but we shipped those jobs off long ago. Yeah, it's a big issue, this immigration issue. There's a lot of fingers in the pie here, and there's a lot of problems. But to me, when things get too big, when the issues get too big, and I know as a progressive, a lot of us can suffer from outrage fatigue. You know, it's almost like the Matrix, where you had the choice of the blue pill or the red pill. And if you took the blue pill, everything would be nice and shiny and happy, and you could eat a steak. But if you took the red pill, you realized what the reality was, and then you're kind of forced to do something about it. And those of us on the left side, I always believe we're the ones that took the red pill. We're the ones that didn't believe that blue pill jargon about, you know, America's the greatest country in the world. We just didn't take that at face value. We believe that if America's going to call itself the greatest country in the world, we ought to live up to that. We ought to have some measurement of that. We shouldn't be 37th in healthcare, and we shouldn't be 40th in communicable disease prevention, and we shouldn't be so low in infant mortality and numbers of people with degrees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, on the progressive side of things, we actually believe in measuring our results. And of course, maybe that's why they're having such trouble in Iraq now, is because they're not measuring the lack of results. It goes round and round and round and round here at the Russ Belville Show. All these issues, they all speak to something, and they speak to trying to keep the American people out of the process, trying to keep the American people ignorant and supplicant and sheep to be led to the slaughter. And we're not going to take it. We're going to fight back one boy, one girl, one person at a time. You and me, we can do this. Keep your chin up. We'll keep fighting. I'm Russ Belville. It's 42 after the hour.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. It's okay. He's a first-time host, the winner of the search for the next great progressive talk radio star. This is the Russ Belville Show.
47 after the hour, I'm Russ Belville. We were talking a little bit about, you know, the Democrats and how sometimes it seems like the Democrats just won't stand up for what a lot of us progressives out here believe. And, there's some evidence about this here. There's just recently this report that was put out by Media Matters for America. You can find them at mediamatters.org. And this was a report on how progressive America really is. Now, this is something that's kind of a huge thing for me because a lot of you know I am the Red State refugee. I'm originally from Nampa, Idaho, which is in the conservative county in Idaho. So, wrap your mind around that one there, the conservative county in Idaho. I mean, how red can you be? But anyway, when I was growing up there, you know, my family is fairly liberal progressive. You know, my father and my mother, fairly liberal progressive folks. And, you know, I always grew up thinking that, you know, America was all about equality and freedom and rights and, you know, and loving America, of course. But all my political views seemed to be the opposite of the people around me. You know, I was always pro-union. And of course, the people around me in Idaho were all right to work. You know, the unions are bad. And I was always for, you know, welfare and social programs to help people that run into difficulties. And, of course, where I'm from, you know, in Idaho, everybody, oh, the welfare mothers are, you know, they're driving their Cadillacs and they're having kids just so they can have more money. And, you know, they don't all talk that way. But so when I was growing up, you know, I kind of thought I was an odd duck. You know, I always thought I was kind of the black sheep in Idaho because I had all these progressive world views and at least four out of the five people around me, you know, disagreed with me. So I really got to thinking that, you know, what's wrong with being progressive? What's wrong with being liberal? What's happened is the whole country's gone conservative on me and I'm a pariah and nobody, you know, nobody agrees with me. Well, a lot of people agree with me, it turns out. This report from Media Matters, this was a survey from the national, national sources, and we're talking about nonpartisan sources. This is just, you know, Gallup polls and research polls, and not just one poll, but many, many, many polls taken over the past 20 years and analyzed and synthesized, and they find that Americans are actually far more progressive than we are given credit for. And just to define our terms here, conservatives and progressives, regardless if you call yourself liberal, Republican, conservative, you know, Democrat, whatever, green, libertarian, whatever, the basic dichotomy here, the basic schism here is conservatives believe in small government. They prefer free markets and individuals to manage things as much as possible. So you've heard that from a lot of the right. Right. And progressives, they say, believe in a more active government that performs more functions and provides more services. And I've always been that way. I've always believed in an active government because, you know, I feel that government is just us. Government is us gathering together to tackle the problems that are too big for us to handle by ourselves. And here's some of the stats here. 67% of the people said we need a strong government to handle complex economic problems. Nearly 58% of the people said government should be doing more, not less. And 59% agreed that the government has grown because the problems of the country have grown. So at least 6 out of 10 people out there agree with me as far as the government. We also see that two-thirds of the people, 69%, believe government should care for those who can't care for themselves. And they feel so strongly about that that more than half of the people, 54% of the people, are willing to incur more debt in order to help people that can't care for themselves. And so as we look at this survey, you know, they find that Americans are far, far more progressive. So Democrats, take a look at that survey and realize that you've got us. We support you. We support the progressive agenda. And if you're not going to be behind the progressive agenda strong enough, we will find someone who will be behind the progressive agenda, someone who will lead us to the so-called promised land. All right. So take a look at that at MediaMatters.org if you get a chance. I'll post a link to that on my blog at RadicalRuss.net. So you can all check that out as well. So it's 51 after the hour. We just got a little bit of time left here in the show. We're going to take a short little break here. And when I come back, I promised you at the beginning of the show that we had some stories about, about poo. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a... Well, you make up your own pun. We're going to have some stories about poo, and we'll see you right after the break.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
55 after the hour, and I've got my engineer, Ricky Champagne, standing by on the 7-second delay button because I'm going to talk about stuff. Yeah, I have some stories about poo. So if you're eating a Tootsie Roll or a Baby Ruth, you might want to put it away for a while. Normally I wouldn't. This isn't something I would normally bring up. But, you know, if it was only two stories, maybe I forget about it. But when three straight stories hit my internet wires about poo, I just can't ignore it. So here's the first one. This was in St. Petersburg, Russia. Now, you know how we have the free speech zones? You know, I used to think America was a free speech zone. But, you know, when Bush goes out, he sets up, you know, little fenced off areas way far away where people can engage in their constitutionally protected right to free speech. Well, in Russia, they don't bother with fences or free speech zones. Here's what happened. This was in Murmansk. In Russia, and opponents of Vladimir Putin, the president out there, had hoped to rally on the porch of the Culture Palace. But city officials closed the building, took away the front porch steps, and spread dung all around the front porch of the Culture Palace. And according to Yelena Vasileva, who is the leader of one of the protesters, she said the stench was so strong you couldn't breathe, so only the most tenacious stayed. That's amazing. So they smeared manure all around the building so the protesters would go away. Well, I don't know if that would work here in America, but that's that's quite an amazing way to silence free speech. And speaking of free speech and poo, since I was, a week ago, we had a case that came out from having to do with United States Representative Marilyn Musgrave in Colorado. And someone had left a bag of dog poo on her front door of her office. They didn't set it on fire. That's the old way, right? But they left this dog poo in the front of this congresswoman's office, and they charged her with the criminal use of a noxious substance. Which, yeah, okay, I can see that, noxious substance. Anyway, the courts went and reviewed this case, and they threw out the conviction of this use of a noxious substance, and they ruled that her putting the dog poopy at the congressman's building was an act of free speech. So now poop is part of free speech. that's kind of nice to know. I, my dog always thought it was part of free speech anyway. And so here's the third. Here's the trifecta here with the poop stories. Just yesterday in the Senate, one of the Senate hallways got shut down because they found three big piles of poo in the hallway. Just sitting there in the Senate hallway, three big piles of poo, and they don't think it was accidental. They were, you know, large piles of poo laid out very in an organized way. And I just want to know, how do you pull that off? I mean, how does someone not notice three different people dropping trow in the hallways of the Senate? Well, maybe they're dropping trow so much in the hallways of the Senate that nobody noticed. Maybe that's what's going on. I don't know, but that's your poo news for the day. So yeah, that's maybe not the best topic to end on, but hey, they can't all be gems, I guess. anyway, I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee. I'm headed back up the mountain to enjoy some camping. I'll see you next week. Take care of yourselves and call your congressman.